are Buddhists, idol worshippers. In fact, devotional practices can be easily misunderstood, or they can be easily misinterpreted as idol worshipping. Buddha, in fact, discouraged idol worshipping. He says, Bahung ve saranang yanti pabbatani vanani cha arama rukka chaityani manussa bhaya tajjita. It is because of fear and threatened with fear, human beings go to the refuge, to the mountains, to the trees, to the pagodas, and they pay homage to these things out of fear. Netang ko saranang kemang, netang sarana muttamang, netang sarana magamma, sabba dukkha pamuccati. No one can achieve enlightenment or end the suffering by paying homage to mountains, pagodas, hills, or trees, or idols. Then the Buddha says, Yocha buddhancha dhammancha sangancha saranang gato chattari arya satchani sammapanyaya passati. If a human being were to go to refuge to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, and by following the Noble Eightfold Path, if that human being were to penetrate the Four Noble Truths and realize it, that human being ends the suffering. That human being achieves enlightenment. So we are a group of people as followers of the Buddha who are heading towards enlightenment. So his message is very clear. His message is very clear. He says, by paying homage, respect to the idols, we cannot achieve enlightenment. And that is not the way to achieve enlightenment. Now, are Buddhist idol worshippers? Do you come here and pay your homage, respect to the Buddha, to the pagodas, or the other objects of veneration, thinking by doing that you can be enlightened? If you are doing so, you are an idol worshipper. But if you understand correctly the purpose of the devotional practices in Buddhist traditions, in fact, by paying homage to a Buddhist statue or by paying our respect to the objects of veneration, in fact, by that act alone, we do not think or believe that we will be enlightened. But these devotional practices are important and they have their own significance in social, cultural, religious, spiritual and psychological aspects of human life. So they are extremely important. Because of that, in Buddhist traditions, in every Buddhist schools, we have devotional practices. But these devotional practices have nothing to do with idol worshipping. But someone who doesn't have understanding of Buddhist practices easily can misinterpret or misunderstand these practices we are doing has got something to do with idol worshipping. In fact, it is not. So what do we do here? What do you do when you go to a temple, to a shrine? You prostrate, bow down, you go to the three refuge, you observe precepts, you recite the virtue of the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, you made offerings of light, incense, flowers, and you ask the forgiveness from the triple gems, you make spiritual aspirations, you share the merits, you do chanting, practice meditation, reflect on Dhamma. All these have nothing to do with idol worshipping. But in fact, these are some of skillful, meaningful practices that lead us along the path towards enlightenment. But these practices are not compulsory. Devotional practices are not compulsory, but they are important. And it is good to have them. But no means that we say that they are essential to achieve enlightenment. But they can be stepping stones for a practitioner if the practitioner practices it with right understanding. But if someone practices them with wrong understanding, instead of having these practices as stepping stones, it can be a stumbling block. So what is necessary here is right understanding. Now, as Buddha himself said in the verses which I just mentioned at the very beginning, to achieve the enlightenment and end the suffering, the only path, only way is the Noble Eightfold Path. If it is the case, the devotional practices that we are doing, do they have any link with the Noble Eightfold Path? If you carefully analyze this matter, you in fact will see that these practices we are doing, what I would like to label them as devotional practices, they in fact has got direct and indirect link with the Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path is for those people who accept the Buddha as teacher and Dhamma as guidelines and Sangha as enlightened disciples of the Buddha to be emulated. For such a person, Noble Eightfold Path is the ideal. So we go to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha for refuge. Why do we call it going for refuge? Because in our life, we take refuge in different occasions to get rid of something dangerous. For example, if there is a flood here and we might go to a place which is higher, a mountain place or a building, to take refuge there. If there is fire, then we will go to a place which is safer to get rid of fire, to be safer there. We take refuge in that building or that place. So in that sense, a person go to the Buddha as refuge and the Dhamma and Sangha because he understands that birth-death cycle, this repeated existence, brings so much unsatisfactoriness, and the defilements produce a lot of problems and sufferings, and he wants to get rid of this whole mess of suffering. For such a person, Buddha is refuge, means he is the supreme teacher who can teach you the way how to get rid of this cycle of birth and death process, or this repeated existence. Oh, he is the supreme teacher who can guide you, instruct you, that so that you will be enlightened in time to come. So we go to the Buddha for refuge, means we accept the Buddha as our supreme teacher. That's it. When you say Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, we go to the Dhamma for refuge, means I accept the teachings of the Buddha as guidelines. I uphold them as principles, guiding principles in my life, and I practice them in order to achieve enlightenment. When I go, when I say I go to the Sangha for refuge, means the noble disciples of the Buddha, those who are already enlightened, monks and nuns and the others who are enlightened, and we emulate them, we follow their footsteps, because they are already enlightened ones, so we want to be like them. So, don't you do this when you go to the temple? What do? You, first of all, go to the refuge. Today in our puja session, you all recited Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. I go to the Buddha for refuge. I go to the Dhamma for refuge. I go to the Sangha for refuge. For the second time, for the third time, I go to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha for refuge. This is said, going for refuge, going forth. To what extent you have trust, confidence, respect in the Buddha, to that extent you will listen to him, to that extent you will follow his teaching, and you will try to follow his footsteps. You will follow the Dhamma and Sangha. So going for three refuge is important for someone who wants to get rid of this mess of suffering. Now, going for three refuge alone is not enough. Then we must follow the Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path is divided into three major sections. What are the three major sections? Sila, Samadhi, Panya. In English, morality, mental cultivation, and wisdom. Now, after going for three refuge, what do you do? What did you do today? You do not know what did you do. What did you do after reciting Buddhang Saranang, Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Saranang Gacchami? What did you do after that? You observe five precepts. You observe five righteous principles. I observe the training precepts to train myself to refrain from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, telling lies, and taking intoxicating drinks and drugs. So when a human being observes these five righteous principles, he is upholding morality. He is someone who is upholding ethical principles. This is called sila. So this is a must. If you want to follow the Noble Eightfold Path, and the first step is, you need to be a moral person, a person who upholds ethical principles, a civilized human being, by controlling your speech and action and mind. So the Noble Eightfold Path, it is said, Samma Vacha, Samma Kammanta, Samma Ajiva. Right speech, right actions, and right livelihood. So when you observe five precepts, you are in fact practicing right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Great? Okay, so this is the beginning of the Noble Path. What is the middle of the Noble Path? Mental cultivation. Mental cultivation is to be achieved by developing meditation techniques. There are various types of meditation techniques that tackle our mind and develop our mind. When we develop loving kindness meditation, we reduce hatred and we develop boundless love and compassion. When we cultivate the mindfulness meditations, anapanasati, mindfulness on breath, then we make our mind sturdy, we make it strong and well concentrated. When we develop like appreciative joy, mudita meditation, then we mitigate, reduce the power of jealousy. When we cultivate compassion meditation, we try to get rid of cruelty. When we cultivate equanimity, and then we try to make our mind equanimous and get rid of all the kind of extremes we use. So in this way, different meditation subject has got the different aspects. When we practice impermanent meditation, then we try to reduce our attachment, try to develop wisdom. So in this way, different meditation subject has got different aspect, and they develop and cultivate our mind in a specific way. So we need all the kinds of meditation techniques. Of course, based on the different characters, meditation teachers might give you different subjects of meditation, different objects of meditation to be cultivated. If we notice that someone is easily get angry and agitated, we might introduce him loving kindness meditation. But if we were to see that someone is very lustful and has got so much attachment, greed, and we might introduce the impermanence, so we must introduce the unattractive nature of the physical body, or whatever the subject which is suitable for that individuals. In this way, the meditation is a must. Meditation is a must if you are a Buddhist, and you must cultivate meditation. Without cultivating, without developing meditation, you may not achieve much success in development of your mind. So here, when you come to the devotional practices, how does this devotional practice link with the Noble Eightfold Path in related to meditation? Go back again. After five precepts, what did you do? Forgot. What did you do? You paid homage to Buddha. What did you recite? Itipiso Bhagava. Nine virtues of the Buddha. This is called Buddha Nusati meditation. Reflection of the nine virtues of the Buddha. Second, you recited Swakkhato. Six wonderful qualities of the Dhamma. This is called Dhamma Nusati meditation. Reflection on the Dhamma. Thirdly, you recited Supatipanno. And here you recited nine virtues of the Noble Sangha. This meditation is called Sangha Nusati meditation. Reflection on the qualities of the Sangha. So by this time now you have completed the second part, the portion of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is meditation, mental cultivation. Here in mental cultivation, you are supposed to practice Samavayama, then Samasati and Samasamadhi. Right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. So when you reflect the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha and their virtue, you need concentration, you need mindfulness, you need to reflect carefully, you need to do it again and again. So this portion is relevant to the mental cultivation. What is the third aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path? Wisdom. So what did you do after that? Go back. After reciting and paying homage to the Sangha, what did you do? You have heard three things. What are the things you have heard? You refer to the book. What did you offer? First of all, you offered light, incense, and flowers. These are the three major items you offered, correct? These three items has got symbolic representation to wisdom. And also it has got the other aspect. First of all, the Buddhist practice leads to uproot greed, hatred, and delusion. As long as these three are rooted in human mind, enlightenment is impossible. So when we observe five precepts, we are trying to control these three. When we practice meditation, we are trying to mitigate them, suppress them some more. And when we develop wisdom, we are trying to destroy them perfectly, permanently and irreversibly. So when it comes to offering of light, incense and flowers in a way that we can call offering of these items is dana. Dana means giving away, practicing charity. When you spend money or when you spend to buy these light incense or flowers or for that reason any fruits or anything that you, this is considered as a part of dana. When you practice dana, what happens to you? Your greed become lesser because you, when you have greed and then if you want to practice dana, greed is to be reduce, then only you can give away. When you give away, again you are giving out of goodwill, out of friendship, and then instead of hatred you produce goodwill, friendship, loving kindness. Again, dana is to be practiced with understanding. So instead of delusion, we encourage understanding. So in one way, looking at these three items, in fact you are practicing the dana, and by practicing this you are reducing your greed, hatred and delusion. This is one aspect of it. On the other hand, these three has got symbolic representation, symbolic aspect of it. Enlightenment is development of compassion and wisdom. So the Buddha is recognized as the personification of great compassion and great wisdom. When we follow the path of the Buddha and then realize the ultimate enlightenment, then we become human beings full of compassion and full of wisdom. So enlightenment is actually the pinnacle of compassion and wisdom. Now compassion is directly related to our heart. Compassion is umbrella term for all the virtue. Wisdom is related to brain, if you want to point out something on your body. And that is of course our intellectual capacities, abilities, our understanding, and all these come under the umbrella of wisdom. So enlightenment is in fact compassion and wisdom. Now in Buddhist traditions, when you offer incense, symbolically it represents virtue. Symbolically it represents virtue, development of compassion, development of virtuous qualities. Buddha is recognized here as someone who is full of virtue. Namami Buddhaṃ Gunasāgaraṃ. I pay homage to the Buddha who has got the virtue of ocean. Here when you offer incense, symbolically you are representing the virtue. Here you are dedicating yourself to develop the virtue for yourself. Got it? Flowers, again. Flowers symbolically represent and easily seen as a mark of impermanence. And after all, enlightenment is to be achieved within this body and mind. What is this body and mind? In our impermanent meditation we practice, our body and mind is nothing but collected, compounded forces and energies. Buddha divided them into five aggregates of clinging. Material energy, feelings, perceptions, mental formation, consciousness. All of them are impermanent. All of them are impermanent, subject to change and disappear. This is called anicca. So every moment they are changing. So whatever is subject to changing, and when we cling to them, thinking it's me, my, and grab them, then that produces suffering. So clinging leads to suffering, but the understanding of impermanent releases us from suffering. So when you understand impermanence, you also understand suffering. Then when you understand impermanent and suffering, you also understand soullessness. We always think that there is someone behind us that we call soul or I or me, that experience. But actually what exists? Nothing but these forces and energies. Because of the delusion, because of not understanding, we cling to these five aggregates of clinging as I and me. Because of that, we again produce suffering. So when you understand this, you understand anatta, means non-self. So when you contemplate on impermanence, by offering flowers, when you offer flowers, what do you recite? Vannaganda gunopetang etang kusuma santating. These flowers are beautiful, fragrant. I think you can read it. Oh, is he not here? Okay. These flowers are beautiful, fragrant. I offer to the Buddha, but they are subject to change and disappear, wither away like my body. So subject to change and disappear. So the flowers are easily seen as a mark of impermanence. So when you offer the flowers, you are supposed to contemplate on impermanent and apply it to your body and mind. Body and mind means five aggregates of clinging. Like this flower which is offered in the morning, we will wither away in the evening. So is the body, so is feeling, so is perception, mental formation, consciousness. All these are subject to change and disappear. Then you see anicca. Whenever you see anicca, then you understand whatever subject to change and disappear is not worth to cling as I, me, mine. And when you see this process of anicca, dukkha, anatta, it is wisdom. You are leading to enlightenment, going to wisdom. So by offering flowers and you are contemplating on the underlying, eternal existential truth of impermanence, which is in fact is the so-called conditioning for enlightenment. Now, virtue is the heart quality. As you said, we need to develop it as a part of enlightenment. Then we also have to develop our wisdom. So the wisdom is developed by constantly paying attention and contemplating about impermanent nature. This is in fact called vipassana meditation also. Looking at the five aggregates of clinging as subject to change and disappear, constantly arising and passing away. Then what about the light? Light symbolically represent enlightenment. Because enlightenment is absence of delusion. Ordinary human mind is covered with delusion. When you offer light to the Buddha, you make a wish, like this lamp, dispel the darkness. May I have the wisdom to understand, to destroy the ignorance. So the light dispels the darkness. So darkness is symbolically representing delusion that we are having. And light is symbolically representing the wisdom. So Buddha is known as a torch bearer, bringer of the light. Tiloka Dipang Sambuddham, light to triple world, because he is the first to be awakened from the deep sleep of ignorance, and he is also the first to awaken the others from the deep sleep of ignorance. Because of that reason, when we offer the light to the Buddha, we offer this as a mark of respect. At the same time, we remind ourselves, and symbolically, this is the wisdom. So, this is the wisdom category again. The incense, flowers, and the light combine together and represent the wisdom aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path. So, Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, these three are completed when you come to this point. But of course, we also offer flowers, incense, and the light as a mark of profound gratitude towards the Buddha. We do not believe that Buddha will eat this fruit. We do not believe that the Buddha will drink this water. But we offer, what else do we offer? We offer everything, whatever we can, correct? But why do we do it? Because we have so much thoughts of gratitude for this wonderful teacher, for showing us the path. So when we offer fruits and the robes and rice and your medicinal drink or whatever, sometimes in Chinese New Year time we offer different things, in some other occasions we offer some other things, whatever, when we bring and offer to the Buddha, and we are offering it out of gratitude, and that's a way of paying our respect, concern, love towards this teacher. That's it. It's not idol worshipping. This is how we pay our homage and respect. So other than light, incense, and flowers, these are of course symbolically representing the wisdom, but all the other items also, fruits and all the others, we offer to the Buddha as a part of dana, as a charity, because these are again will be used in the temples or monasteries, whatever the fruits and all these are offered, and by you to the Buddha, of course, eventually will be offered to the monks and nuns or whoever, and the robes and the rice or whatever you offer here will be used in the temple. So it's a part of charity, part of dana on one hand. On the other hand, this is also we offered here as a way of paying our respect, paying our concern, care, love towards this great teacher. So it has nothing to do with idol worshipping, because we do not believe this statue will consume these things. Correct? So this is not idol worshipping. Idol worshipping has something to do to believe that idols themselves have got certain kind of power. Do you believe this Buddha statue has got any power? If you were to come here and do anything, the Buddha still will remain smiling at you. So, idol worshipping has got something to do that they believe these statues has got certain power, or there is invisible power behind these statues, behind the mountains, trees, and these objects of veneration. Those people who believe in that way, of course, that is suitable to be called idol worshipping, but we do not have such belief. So this Buddha statue simply representing the Buddha and help us to concentrate on well. That's it. Other than that, what do you do? What did you do today? After offerings, you also ask the forgiveness. You also pay respect to the Buddha relics, Buddha image, or Bodhi tree. But when you go to these objects of veneration, Bodhi tree is representing the Buddha. Pagoda is representing the Buddha. But the image also represents the Buddha. That's it. When you go to the Bodhi tree, you are not paying respect to a tree. But the tree is the symbol, personification of the Buddha. So you are paying respect to the enlightened one. So whether it is a pagoda, or whether it is a Buddha image, or whether it is a Bodhi tree, or whether it is any other object of veneration, all these represent the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. That's it. We do not have any belief these objects of veneration has got some kind of supernormal power. So, because of that, we are not idol worshippers here again. What else do you do? You ask the forgiveness. But when you ask the forgiveness, what does it mean? We are not coming here and ask the forgiveness, believing this Buddhist statue has got a kind of power to forgive our sin. Not such a belief. Then, what is the significance here? Do you ask the forgiveness from your mother and father if you were to do any mistake? Do you ask the forgiveness from your teacher if you were to make a mistake? So simply in the same way, Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, we, for us, that is the most highest and supreme. So we come here and we say by thoughts, words and actions, if unintentionally, if we make any mistake, please forgive. So here it is like a student asking forgiveness from a teacher. Like a son or a daughter ask the forgiveness from mother and father. We simply ask the forgiveness. It is not asking forgiveness for the sin. Buddha is not in any position to forgive our karma or sin. So this is, again, it's important for us to recorrect our mistake and go forward. And suppose we make a mistake, we come here and we make offerings and we ask the forgiveness, and this is a turning point for us. This is needed for us. That's it. It's a psychological. Nothing to do with idol worshipping. What else do you do? You make spiritual aspirations. Making spiritual aspiration is setting up your goal again and again and again. What do I want to do in my life? I want to cultivate my spiritual faculties and achieve enlightenment. Correct? So we make a strong wish here. After doing the meritorious actions, we do strong aspirations. And may I cultivate my spiritual faculties and then may I achieve enlightenment. So this is a must. You must do it again and again and again. Then your mind is set up towards that direction. It's a need. Nothing to do with idol worshipping. What else do you do? You share the merits. Sharing the merits means it's a form of dana, form of charity. And having shared the merits, what do? You are showing your gratitude, gratefulness towards your mother, father, towards your teacher, and the loved ones, relatives, friends, and the others. When you share the merits, we share the merits with human beings, non-human beings, and all the living beings. Correct? We also share the merits with the departed ones. And we wish all of them to be free from worries and sufferings, to be well, to be happy. And we wish all of them to attain Nibbana, enlightenment. So this is wholesome practice, nothing to do with idol worshipping. What else do you do? You do the chanting. Do you know what did you chant? All this chanting, if you were to understand, they all have something to do with wholesomeness. Correct? All the discourses we learn and these teachings of the Buddha, when we chant them, we reflect their meaning and it refreshes our mind. What else do you do? You do the meditation. You sit quietly and reflect virtue of the triple gems, or you radiate loving kindness, or you develop your mindfulness, or any kind of meditation. And this is a development of your mind. What else do you do? You do reflection of Dhamma. You perhaps might pick up a Dhamma book and read it, reflect. So all these have nothing to do with idol worshipping. But these are devotional practices and they are not compulsory, but we find them very useful and we find them as a skillful means to develop our faculties. And they are closely linked and related with the Noble Eightfold Path.